Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
611, Gary McCarthy in about an hour. Pat Brady from Cleveland in about an hour and a half. You should make an appointment for both of those. I know there are ways down the road, but, you know, I mean, we didn't book them on the show for our health. We booked them on the show for your dining and dancing pleasure. Bill Curtis later. Kid of the week this hour, Nick, in a few minutes. All right, so the news out of the convention is what it is. The Melania Trump thing, yeah, she stole the speech. Or somebody on the team stole the speech. It's obvious. It's clear. Why the Trump people continue to deny it is just hoping that the news cycle will kick in and something else will come up, and it will later. The bigger story yesterday was another attempt. The more important story that doesn't get as much coverage, it was an attempt to try to affect the rules in the Rules Committee early on in the day, pretty much right after the convention was gaveled in, and that failed. Apparently, it was done by the same people that attempted the coup in Turkey.
The failed coup, yeah.
And then there was the speakers over and over again. So wherever, I don't understand where the big show business part of the convention is going to kick in. Remember Trump promised not another boring convention. It's just going to be a big show business thing.
Yeah.
It's the same tired, screaming ninnies that you're going to see in Philadelphia next week. It just depends on your point of view. The people in Philadelphia are going to be screaming about Trump. The people here are going to be screaming about Hillary all week. And then we move on. Now, the difference is because 2016 has been so weird is, will you get a convention bump out of this? Will there be a giant middle of the country? And I don't mean middle of the country as in Midwest, as in not far right or not far left is what I'm talking about. Will they actually respond to the Trump week? Mm-hmm. Will they respond to the Hillary week? I would guess you're not going to get much of either.
No,
because the people that know they're going to vote for Hillary know they're going to vote for Hillary. The people that know they're going to vote for Trump know they're going to vote for Trump. The people in the middle are waiting for Weld and Johnson to come on today to see if they like them.
Right. The Duck Dynasty guy didn't convince you?
The whole thing was just, you know what? As much of a political junkie as I am, I couldn't watch it. I shut it off.
Did you see Scott Baio?
Yeah, no, shut it off.
Scott Baio.
I see Scott Baio. I'll wait for Joni Loves Chachi.
The reunion.
The thing when he was in his prime.
I think you are right, though. It was boring. I enjoyed some of the military speeches, some of the vets. Sean Smith's mom, boy, that was a pretty moving speech.
Well, here's the thing, too. Look, you know how I feel about Benghazi.
Yeah.
The president lied. The State Department was complicit in some way. It doesn't mean they killed or were responsible for the death of those four men, but it was unbelievably poorly handled, and it was specifically to keep the Obama campaign on message in 2012. That's it. There's no other logical explanation for it. You can congressionally investigate this to death. They lied. That's it. For that alone, you could be offended for the rest of your life, but I wouldn't for a moment judge Sean Smith's mother for what she says happened to her. She lost
her son. Yeah.
She's entitled to be rational, irrational, and everything in between.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I thought it was a very powerful speech. But the ones, many were very boring. You're right. You know what's fun? Looking at the crowd and just people watch.
You know what else was kind of fun? I was doing thing for the opening bell today where we were watching social media and they're doing the feeds now, ABC and CBS. And you could, you know how you watch Twitter generally and see people's comments? This way you get to see the video and see the comments. It was brutal to watch. I mean, it was good because you saw comments immediately and you could react immediately. But, you know, when the Trump speech was up and other things were happening, the comments and Scott Baio, people thought he had already died and was dead already. I mean, it was just hilarious.
I did not know that. I did not know that people thought Scott Baio was dead. Yeah. My God, people, pay attention. Right. Scott Baio lives.
Yeah.
Donald coming out on night one, I don't think that's ever been done. Normally, you wait. Oh, and the other funny thing was Trump jumped on Bill O'Reilly, was on a show, at the exact same time that Sean Smith's mother was speaking. In other words, Trump was competing with his own convention.
Oh, no.
He just couldn't stay out of the spotlight.
When he came out to introduce Melania, I thought, he's going to speak. He's going to say something. He did, but he didn't. I thought he was going to go on longer than he actually did.
With the smoke and the stuff. And I mean, it's just,
he can't just let her have her moment.
Let it go, Don. Yeah. Let it go. I thought one of the more revealing, and I'm not even being flip about this, one of the more revealing interviews you'd ever want to see for Trump, he was on David Faraday's Golf Channel show. Faraday interviewed him at least a couple of months ago now. Yeah. But it aired last night because they were saving it for the convention. And he was as relaxed and laid back because he's an old friend of Faraday's. And talked about all of it, But times he was even mildly likable.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went, slapped myself in the face.
Wake up, Cochran.
But if you want to see the Trump Faraday thing, the latest Faraday on the Golf Channel, and I'm sure you can find it online, is Trump.
You know,
it's
actually worth watching. We always, Hillary's hair comes under criticism a lot, or her pantsuits, whatever. Did you notice Trump's hair? He got a haircut. He cut the side of his hair and the back of his hair very short. So the comb over is accented more now.
Whoever styles his hair ought to get a purple heart. I can't imagine the danger they're under. If that thing explodes at any given time, be whacking them from three different directions. Nominee for the worst person in the world, to borrow the Keith Olbermann bit, has to be the Playboy Playmate story. We'll tell you about that coming up. Before we get to anything else, and we will play you the comparative speeches of Michelle Obama and Melania Trump later, and you'll see that it's a lift. But we're not going to beat this in the ground. Let everybody else do it.
What to see? What's out at the show? I need to know the place and when.
John DeCosta, the Nick theme.
But there's one guy on GM's Cochran show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Nick DiGiulio joins us now. I like the idea, John, that Nick, that John was sitting around going, stinking. I need something that rhymes with stinking. Stinking, Nick thinking. Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
That's his process.
That's how his mind works.
That's his process right there.
Yes, sir.
How are you, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing fine.
Good.
Ghostbusters 2, any good?
Well, you mean Ghostbusters, the reboot.
It's not a sequel? It's not Ghostbusters 2?
No. No, Ghostbusters 2, they ruined that one already back in 1989.
Did they do a sequel?
Oh, yeah.
How do I not even remember that?
Because it sucked.
Who was in it?
Everybody from the original Ghostbusters. Ivan Reitman directed it.
I literally don't remember the sequel.
This is why it's so amazing to me that there was all this anti-Ghostbusters stuff, like, all these, guys in their mom's basement complaining that women were going to play Ghostbusters and saying that they were going to ruin their childhood. Well, their childhood was ruined in 1989.
I literally don't remember that movie. How is that sequel not a big deal? Was it a big deal at the time?
Summer of 1989. And it was, it was considered a massive disappointment, critically and at the box office. But it came out summer of 1989, yeah.
Are we talking like Caddyshack 2 bad?
No. No, not. There aren't many movies as bad as Caddyshack 2.
So it wasn't an epic failure, but it was a failure.
It was a failure nonetheless, yes. And it was considered a failure, among the fans of the first one. And all these people who were complaining, they're going to ruin it. Well, 5 years after the original came out, they pretty much screwed it up. So...
How about that? How did I miss that? All right. Well, what do you think of this one?
I loved it. I loved it. In fact, I liked it more than the original.
Come on.
I do. I love it. And I will say this. I do not have the emotional connection that so many people have about the original Ghostbusters. I think the original Ghostbusters has some great moments in it, some funny stuff. Great chemistry between the guys in the movie, obviously, and some good bits. But I was never on board. I mean, I would take Caddyshack and Stripes over both of those movies over Ghostbusters any day.
I think Ghostbusters, the original, was of its time, and like many things, as we get older, we remember it more fondly than we probably thought of it when we saw it.
Absolutely right. I agree with that 100%. I got to say, I love this version, and the women in it are great, and they're funny. The effects are really good. I saw it in 3D. The 3D is fantastic. I just had a blast. And as I went in with really low expectations because whoever Sony hired to do the ad campaign for this movie should be fired because, it looked terrible. Every commercial, every trailer that I saw, I just kept thinking to myself, this movie is going to be an absolute disaster. And it's the complete opposite of that. All the women are really, really funny in it. It's a star-making performance from Kate McKinnon. And if people watch SNL, they know that she's the best cast member on the on that show right now. And it's she welcome to your movie career, because she's going to have one after this movie, after people see her in this one. And I just thought it was great, and I loved everybody in it, and I thought the cameos were funny. Chris Hemsworth is hysterical as the Mimbo in it. And the women are all good. There's great chemistry between them and great gags, good effects. It was a blast.
I assume, you take your parents to this?
Yeah.
And what was their review?
Okay, they both loved it. Let me just say, this is really, I'm glad you brought that up, because my dad's sitting next to me. My dad does not watch Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
Ever. So during Kate McKinnon's second scene, her second scene, my dad leans over to me and goes, "Who the hell is that?" I go, "That's Kate McKinnon. She's on Saturday Night Live." He goes, "She is funny." And that was it.
Yeah. She is.
Had no idea who she was before the movie. He is now the president of the Kate McKinnon fan club.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
I loved it, though, man. I encourage everybody to go out and see it. It did not do well. It cost $145 million to make, and it grossed $46 over the weekend, and it was second to the Pets movie, the Secret Life of Pets. Made more money. So if this continues to drop, it's going to be considered a failure, even though it ends open-ended with the possibility of having a sequel. And I hope they make one, because I thought it was a great reboot. And there's a really lovely, and you would enjoy this, Steve. All of the original Ghostbusters cast members, the major cast members, they all make cameos in the movie. I'm not giving anything away. I won't tell you where or when they pop up in the movie. But there's even a really wonderful cameo by Harold Ramis, and it was a moment in the movie that where, you know, I was in the theater. I was probably the oldest, beside my parents. I was probably the oldest one in the theater, because there were a lot of guys in their 30s and then their 20s and girls and little kids in the theater. And so when I saw this little tribute that they do to Harold early in the film, I audibly went, "Aw!" Right. And everybody just kind of looked at me like, What's the big deal? And I'm like, man, that was Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
So there's a really wonderful little tribute to Harold. Well, and they dedicate the movie to him. They dedicate the movie to him at the end.
Well, it's nice. By the way, Leslie Jones from Saturday Night Live, the African-American comedian, very funny woman, is just got crushed on Twitter over the weekend with monkey pictures and gorilla pictures and just the most racist, vile viciousness. And I should talk to Ross about this, my son Ross. You know, Twitter, I think, has to get to a point, because I like Twitter very much, but Twitter has to get to a point where they say, you can't be on Twitter unless you use your name. You got to put your name up. Because you put your name up, these cowards won't be able to hide anymore. You know, you have to use your name. Because if you're willing to stand behind your name and be a racist creep, then we know where to find you and we can keep an eye on you.
I agree, man. It's completely ridiculous. And actually, I got to tell you, I mean, that's the worst that I've heard. The worst stuff that I've heard is what's happening to Leslie Jones. But from the beginning of the announcement of this movie, the trolls, particularly the boys who live in the basements of their mom's houses, really went out of their way to try and destroy this movie and just took it personally. And some of the stuff that they posted and some of the things that they've done online, unacceptable. And it's all this Leslie Jones stuff is deplorable. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
They're just cowards. Yep. You know, just absolute cowards.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Enjoy your week.
Thanks, man.
6:28, Steve Cochran Show continues with a big story next. Ramondre on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Kid of the Week sponsored by Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. And before I get to that, speaking of kids, Lisa Wirt sent me a note and a beautiful blanket that she made for Abigail. It says, "Thank you for your level-headedness every morning. I enjoy the stories you share of your own family as well. When I hear you talk about Abigail Grace, makes me smile. I want to make you a quilt of comfort for her to enjoy, even when you're not there. I hope you don't mind. I found the pictures on Facebook." No, of course not. Very nice.
So
very
nice.
Creative.
Yeah.
So thank you, Lisa Wirt. Very nice of you. All right, Kid of the Week turns into Kid of the Year when Dave and Mary lock themselves in a room. And then eventually smoke comes out of the chimney. And I don't know if the color of the smoke matters, but that'll tell us that you've come up with a Kid of the Year.
Oh, that's a good idea, though.
Maybe one of those Duraflame logs of all sorts of different colors.
Yeah, I don't think you should close off the ventilation, though, when you do that.
No. Especially if our heads explode.
2016 Kid of the Year will be awarded a $5,000 prize courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch. And thanks week to week for your Kid of the Week submissions. You can go online at WGNradio.com/contest to submit your entry, and all the details are there. I would love to see, you know, I mean, we've got so many great kids saving the world. And I'm not being flip at all. These are kids who are doing all sorts of unbelievably charitable things. But I would love to see regular kids just, you know, hey, I did Pokemon Go and I didn't get hit by a car. Probably doesn't rise to the occasion.
No.
But just kids doing simple stuff. You know, I helped my grandmother clean the garage, that type of thing. Whatever.
Having a lemonade stand, earning a little extra money.
I felt bad, man, on the weekend. I drove by a lemonade stand.
You didn't stop?
I couldn't.
Why?
It was on the other side of the road, and I was late for a tea time.
And you were looking for Pokemon.
Oh, come on.
I was playing Pokemon Go.
You got to stop and buy a lemonade.
I didn't have time. So I went by later with the kid, and I gave the kid $100.
Okay. I was going to say give him 10.
Guilt.
But.
It's all about the guilt. So anyway, Kid of the Week time now, and please join me in welcoming Chase Cranford to the program. Good morning, Chase. How are you?
I'm doing good. Steve, how are you?
I'm good. Nice to talk to you. Who is Nancy in your life?
Well,
here's the reason I ask. You were nominated by Nancy, Lane, and Vicky, and three separate people. So who are these people?
Well, you see, my parents, Chuck and Karen, mm-hmm. are friends with a lot of these people, and I get to know them through mutual social connections. But Coach Lane is actually a longtime soccer coach of mine.
Well, here's the thing, and Dave will back me up on this, and Mary Vandeveld and Sandberg, you will as well. And you know this with your godkids, too. When you have other people tell you how great your kid is, you know, not you bragging about your kid, other people tell you how great your kid is, that's a good thing. And then they take the extra step and they nominate them for Kid of the Week. I don't see the Ennett kids or the Cochran kids being nominated.
No.
Do you, Dave?
No, I don't.
Here's a story on Chase. Chase is a dedicated, hardworking team player. Is soccer your sport, bud?
Both soccer and lacrosse. I'm playing both of them at Monmouth College next fall.
Hey, good for you, man. He leaves it all on the field. It continues. In addition to his studies, he started to help the UP Foundation. What is that?
Okay, so I started the Helping UP Foundation in January of 2011.
Uh-huh.
It was a Relay for Life team for a year before that. I started it for my Uncle Pete. The UP actually stands for Uncle Pete.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. He passed away from prostate cancer uh-huh. in January of 2011. And he was basically like a second dad to me. So we were very close. And I saw the financial stress that he was dealing with during his cancer treatment and how it was affecting his bond with his family. And I just thought I could change that. I could do more beyond my Relay for Life team that I had for a year.
You thought that at 14?
I was 12 at the time, I believe.
Wow. Very impressive, man. I just mentioned I'm proud of you.
Well, we went on to start a foundation. We've had it for a couple of years now. We always do this big event, the Shaler Scramble. And it is at Countryside Golf Course in Mundelein.
Okay.
And then there's also a dinner following that from 6 to 8 at Crossroads of Ivanhoe, this awesome restaurant.
Yeah, is this coming up now or is it already passed?
Yeah, it's August 1st.
Well, how do people get information if they want to come? It's a week away, 2 weeks away.
Yeah, it's pretty close. What did you ask? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said, how do people find out more or help out the UP Foundation? What do they do?
They go to the website, www.helpinguppoundation.com.
Helping
Fairly
up.
Straightforward.
Sure. Helpingupfoundation.com, you said, or .org?
.com. Helpingupfoundation.com.
Helpingupfoundation.com. And you said you're about to go off to school, and you're going to play soccer and lacrosse?
Yeah, I am. I actually leave for my first day of soccer tryouts, I believe, August 17th.
Wow, good for you, dude. What are you going to study? Any idea?
I'm either double majoring in international business and Spanish or just majoring and minoring. I know I for sure want to do international business.
Yeah, me too. And look what happened. ended up doing the Steve Cochran show.
That's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. Well, listen, you're an amazing young man, and I'm thrilled to make you a Kid of the Week this week. And here's what we're going to do. We've got a couple things for you. We got a 4-pack of passes to the EAA Air Venture Oshkosh, the world's greatest aviation celebration. This is the biggest deal every summer. Outside of Summerfest in Milwaukee, I don't know that there's a bigger summer party in Wisconsin, right?
I've been to Summerfest before. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's July 25th through the 31st, so it's this coming week. And it's the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, so there's some special World War II aircraft there as well. Get event details online at eaa.org/airventure. And we'll give you a four-pack of day passes for that. You can use it with your family. You got a car?
I do.
How about a free oil change at Cassidy Tire and Service Centers?
I would not mind that at all.
There you go. That's a double winner. How about you sleeping all right, dude?
Yeah, I have been.
Yeah, we're going to make you sleep even better. We'll give you a MyPillow from MyPillow.com. And we'll give you an app gift card. And the app gift card is great because then you can go get some new headphones or whatever you want to get at Apt. Using people since 1936. See their store in Glenview or online at ABT.com. Also, one last thing, because we're clearing out the prizes for you, buddy. ChevyDriveChicago.com, WJN Radio, stainless steel travel mug, and a bag of Papa Nicola's coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. You're an inspiring dude, man. Thanks for being you, and continue that as you go off to college, and don't turn into a derelict.
I plan on it.
All right, thanks. Hold on.
Not much chance of that.
No, not with that kid.
No.
Good advice to end Kid of the Week, though, isn't it? Don't turn into a derelict.
You know what's awesome? The Kids of the Week always, it's not just, well, I play soccer. I play soccer and baseball and this and track. And
where are we going to get a kid that goes, I don't know what I'm going to major in. I plan on taking my first 2 years off until my parents get mad.
The gap years.
Yeah.
Five gap years.
Yeah. Sometime around my junior year when my parents threaten to stop paying for college, I'll declare my major. You guys are amazing. Keep those Kid of the Week submissions coming. Big, small, and in between. We just want to know about good kids doing good stuff. All right, Mary, back to you. By the way, Mary, I was talking about Dave's kids and my kids. Your kids, no great shakes either. Your kids just as big of failures as our kids are.
Oh, I know. After listening to these, I'm like, well, my son did Relay for Life.
No, we have great kids.
We
have
one thing.
Great kids.
We do.
We really do. We're all blessed.
They're not in jail.
Well, that wouldn't be my standard, but that's true as well. .652, if you're up at this hour, I'm guessing right now you're going, God, I'd love to go back to bed. Unless you're one of those morning people.
Oh, we're saying that too.
I've done morning shows for most of the last 30 years. I'm not a morning person. As a matter of fact, the sad fact is, listen, I thank this audience all the time, and I never thank them enough. The tremendous support you've shown this show. Of course, you could go out and tell 10 more people. But the tremendous support you've shown this show, I could never thank you enough for that. But the fact is, I really feel like if we did this show, say, from, like if we moved the morning show from, say, 9 to 1.
That'd be great.
9 to 1. I feel like I'd really start rocking it around 11:15.
Well, yeah, but then you have to deal with traffic, see? I mean, now we drive in. There's just trucks.
Yeah.
Right?
In your express lanes?
Yeah, as far as you know.
No, they haven't been open lately.
As far as you know, that's a good point.
Yes.
So anyway, here's the reason I bring it up. Tired. How'd you like to sleep for 64 straight days?
Wouldn't your back hurt?
I imagine friends come in and flip you.
like a mattress?
Nicole, beautiful girl, by the way. Nicole is 20 years old, suffers from a condition where she falls asleep and cannot wake up. The longest she has slept is 64 days straight. It's something called Klein-Levin syndrome, KLS. It requires 24-hour care. She had her first long-term sleeping episode at the age of 6. Her mom thought she had the flu because at that point she was sleeping up to 18 hours a day. As a young child, disoriented Nicole would not be able to recognize her mom or her family members. Longest episode happened before she turned 14. She woke up in January. She fell asleep just before Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Took 25 months to get a diagnosis for what her family is calling her sleeping spells. She slept between 22 and 64 days straight. And she's never aware of how much time she's missed. Says at times I miss out on Christmas, birthdays, junior and senior prom, and her grandfather's funeral.
Oh.
How brutal is that?
And they just can't wake her up, right? I mean, they're trying
to... Right, right. Nicole sleeps 18 hours a day. The only time she wakes up is to eat. Her eyes could be glazed over. She gets into a sleepwalking phase. We have to make sure she drinks water. We have to keep her hydrated. That's the other thing. Don't they have to hook her up to food after 64 days?
That's what I thought. Yeah. How does she eat? Get nourishment? It's like she's comatose almost.
There are 7.5 billion people in the world. Mm-hmm. 1,000 people worldwide have been diagnosed with this.
Oh, my God.
On the entire planet. And there is no known cure. And obviously, because there's so few people doing it, there's very few, no dollars going to studying it, obviously. The KLS is known as Sleeping Beauty Syndrome, and it's a neurological disorder, and obviously it'll affect her for the rest of her life. She's a beautiful young girl dealing with that. So my point of all of this is, I guess I need to bitch less about being tired.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? Yeah. Thank God she has good caregivers, though, to take care of her and make sure that, everything's taken care of.
Yeah, I would suppose, she'd have to be hooked up to an IV.
Yeah, and using the restroom, too.
I don't know how you'd handle that part, either.
I don't know.
And what if you were pregnant? That would be another situation.
I don't think she's up long enough, though, to get pregnant. Is she?
Yeah, she'd
have to. No, I'm not being funny, right?
No, she had to be awake long enough to date and then eventually to meet someone.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Fall in love.
And then the guy's explaining himself at dinner. Yeah. She's dozing off. He thinks it's him.
Okay, back to the we feel sorry part.
Well, no, I do feel badly for her. I really do. And Sandberg is such a full service producer. In the middle of all of this, she just yelled in my ear, "Catheter!"
I was thinking that too. I just didn't want to say it.
Either that, or that's the name she wants me to call her after she gets married next month. It's 6:57. Let's take a break. Come back. Get you the news. Top of the hour, and then. Former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy, what's he doing now? What's he think about the new guy? And what does he think about protection of cops in the country today? With Gary McCarthy coming up. And, of course, is he, annoyed with me since the last interview he did before he was fired was on the show?
You should ask him about that.
Yeah. 6:57. First, we do this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
There is no doubt whatsoever that these officers were intentionally targeted and assassinated. It was a calculated act against those who work to protect this community every single day.
The men and women responding to this scene yesterday are heroes, just like the men and women that put on a uniform each morning and each night. They are everyday heroes. And I ask this community to continue to pray for peace. We will get through this. Baton Rouge is better than this.
Seven eleven. Eddie Johnson, the new superintendent of police for your Chicago Police Department, is welcome on this show anytime. And we look forward to talking to him. In a moment, we anticipate having Gary McCarthy join us, former police superintendent. And, I would encourage you to do the same thing that I've asked you to do before when it comes to our fighting men and women and overseas and here at home. Thank a cop.
They had a press conference yesterday for a couple of police officers. One was a female police officer who saved a life, a little boy's life, over the weekend. And it was really cool. And watching the news conference, people were lining up to say thank you and to congratulate her, too. But it was nice to do a nice news conference as opposed to a lot of the news conferences that we have to cover these days.
I think it's one of those things, and we can ask Gary McCarthy this, but I think as a cop, it's maybe a pleasant surprise if somebody takes the time to say thank you for the work that you do. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing, Steve? Hi, Mary.
And don't forget Andrea. She's right there.
Hey, Superintendent.
Oh, hey. How are you?
Good to talk to you.
Nice to connect with you again. We'll get to all that in a moment. But I would assume cops don't mind if somebody comes up and says thank you, do they?
No, we like it, actually. People do it more frequently than you might imagine based upon what you hear in the press.
I don't know if you've seen much of the photos and viral videos and stuff that have come up since Dallas and Baton Rouge, but nothing makes me smile more than when you see these videos pop up, and it's a Black Lives Matter rally, and it turns out to be a barbecue with cops and protesters. Oh, or there's a dancing cop, I think, in Ohio as well, that was dancing with some of the protesters. It's not that hard for everybody to get along, is it?
It depends. I've you know, one of my frustrations right now, besides not being involved in what's happening, you know, 35 years in this profession, and it's the worst crisis that my profession has ever suffered. And I thought I was going to be one of the thought leaders that was going to help take policing through what was going on here. And that's absolutely killing me. It harkens me back. My brother was a New York State trooper who retired right before 9/11. And when I spoke to him a couple of days later, because I didn't get to speak to too many people at that point, he was just devastated by not being able to do something about it, you know.
Sure.
And I kind of feel the same way. But it depends on who you're speaking with. Some people you just can't reach. I'm starting to figure that out. I actually was in a town hall meeting with Don Lemon the other night on CNN.
Yep.
And I made the offer right there to put national leadership for law enforcement in the room with leadership, if there is such a thing, by the way, with Black Lives Matter. And it was not overtly acknowledged or accepted, but afterwards it was made clear to me that people were interested. So I went out the next day and I started making phone calls to all my friends in law enforcement. And I was told roundly by individuals who were in the meeting that the president hosted last week.
Right.
That the same offer was made right there by the president, and it was flatly turned down by Black Lives Matter, saying, you know, we don't want to meet with them. We have an agenda, and we're going to pursue it.
But I don't get the impression that it's a cohesive agenda. You know, this Black Lives Matter thing that I see factions of Black Lives Matter around the country that, you know, they're getting along with the cops, and they want to be able to protest and exit, you know, and be able to do that, their constitutional right. I don't understand the vigilance of some portions of it. Do you?
No, I don't. And it's not even vigilance. You've got our attention. Let's sit down and try and figure this thing out.
Yeah, why wouldn't you do that?
And the response is no. Because I can't answer that. I can't answer that. It makes no sense. But, you know, unfortunately, what I've been seeing, and maybe I'm just more sensitive to it, and even while I was still there near the end of November and dealing with the protests on Michigan Avenue, one of the things that was a sea change in my mind that's really troubling to me is the fact that you heard me for years going back to the NATO protests talking about the fact that we would defend people's right to free speech and be intolerant of criminal behavior. Well, we stopped delivering on the intolerant criminal behavior because we would arrest people who assaulted cops, and we had pictures of it, and we would not get them prosecuted in Cook County. They were non-processed and released. Now, you can't have it both ways. And what's happening here, and I've been talking about this a lot because it's very clear to me, is that we have fostered a culture of noncompliance with the police now. And this has been fostered by, I blame elected officials and the political climate that is simply not coming up with a plan and simply reacting politically to movements like Black Lives Matter. Now, obviously, the police can do better. We have to do better. We've made some terrible mistakes. Where those mistakes happen, people need to be held accountable and prosecuted under the same constitution that anybody else who is accused of a crime gets prosecuted under.
Right.
So we're looking for a double standard here, but at the end of the day, we're creating lawlessness in this country. And what we've seen with the assassination of these police officers is a natural outgrowth of that erosion that starts with the fact that people are telling individuals, young people, not only to not comply with the police, but to actively resist the police.
Yeah, and it can't work that way in a civilized society. Give me 30 seconds to get a traffic update in here, and then more with Gary McCarthy, former Chicago police superintendent. Talking with Gary McCarthy, former CPD super, and nice to have you on the show again. All right, so listen, there's a media culpability to this as well. The rush to report a story as if we have all the facts as soon as they come out. I've never seen the foot race to put uncensored video on the air without telling, even remotely telling the full story. And all of that just inflames everybody, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And any video that is released at least with the inference of wrongdoing by police.
Right.
If not the overt comment that, you know, another bad police video. So, absolutely. Look, there's plenty of accountability to go around, but it seems as though I don't hear the word accountability except when we're talking about the police. I'm not talking about... I'm curious, where are the elected officials now? What are they doing? Because they're not... I don't hear anybody coming up with a plan. Where are the community activists who have been fostering this sentiment in the community that's leading to the fact that police officers are now under attack?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I would like to hear, and I said this on the air as well, I'd like to hear anger from the president. I'd like to hear anger from Mayor Emanuel, because you need to be angry about the fact that cops are in danger. And this is what we talked about yesterday, too. You know, a cop is sworn to protect the guy that spits in his face, who's standing next to the guy that shakes his hand and says thank you equally. That's what cops do every single day. And while you try to get rid of every bad cop and every racist cop in the meantime, well, the cops are doing that. What are the elected officials doing? We're in the middle of 2 weeks worth of conventions there. You know, it's great to stand up and say, hey, we got to be better to our cops. Well, what does that accomplish? Nothing.
No, absolutely. And what we get are value statements. That's what's driving me crazy. You know, when we have some sort of crisis, we need a plan. You know, 2 weeks ago, after the officers got shot in Dallas, I happened to be on a news show, and we were just about to go live, and they interrupted me. They said, the Attorney General is coming on, so we're going to kick to that, and then we're going to come back. The Attorney General of the United States, the lead law enforcement person in the country, got up and gave a political speech with value statements. And as soon as she finished, I said, how about a plan? There's nobody taking charge of what's happening. There's a one-way conversation about law enforcement without law enforcement. Law enforcement is not involved in this conversation. I can give you a plan. Any law enforcement leader in this country can give you a plan, but nobody wants to do that. What they want to do is they want to react to individual incidents, tie them all together, and just throw it at the wall. There were 3,000 people shot in Chicago last year. There's obviously going to be a lot more this year. We might hit 400 murders by the end of July. At the end of the day, there were 19 police-related shootings last year in this city.
Right.
Which was almost a 70% reduction from when I got here in 2011.
And that's cops called to every incident, obviously. That's cops who report to every incident. And I go back to what happened in Minneapolis. In Minneapolis, there's a protocol that a cop has if somebody says they have a gun in the car. And Gary McCarthy, correct me if I'm wrong, but when a cop tells you, put your hands out of the car, he opens a door, you get out of the car, and he disarms you, you do it. You don't reach for the gun that you tell him you have.
When I get pulled over by the police, and I had to describe this to somebody recently. First of all, I get nervous. Second of all, I keep my hands on the wheel. I tell them that, I haven't been pulled over since I'm retired, but I tell them that I'm on the job. I tell them that I'm carrying a weapon. I do all the things that I'm telling people that they should be doing in interactions with the police. So I don't even know what to say anymore, except for the fact that I'm waiting for a plan. Somebody's got to take control, because unless everybody thinks that what we're doing is good, if this is democracy in action and we're getting somewhere, let's keep doing it.
I don't think good's part of the conversation. Before we jump to what's happening in this city and what you're doing now, I'm concerned, too, about the fact that these last two shooters are ex-Marines. And I say ex-Marines because they lost their ability to be called Marines when they committed the felonies and these murders.
I like the way you think, yeah.
But these two men come out of the service in some form of damage. And I think and this is the other thing, Gary, that I don't understand. Why hasn't the Pentagon stepped up and said immediately, like now, right after Dallas and certainly right after Baton Rouge, we know these were Marines. We're looking at the problem of PTSD more so than ever. We're going to get after it. We're going to get after it in ways we never have. I haven't heard a word.
Yeah, agreed. Well, like I said, there's plenty of accountability to go around, but apparently the only accountability goes to the police at this point. That's all I'm hearing. And it's really frustrating, and you're absolutely right. growing up with a World War II Marine who suffered severely from PTSD, I understand that, you know, it's a big issue.
You were talking a few moments ago, both of you, about creating more rage. Can you, and I know there needs to be police accountability, I completely understand that, but from your point of view, Gary, explain IPRA's decision to make all of these videos public. Why do that? Does that not incite more rage, or do you think that'll create calm?
No, it's kowtowing. It's political pandering. That's what's happening. You know, because of the political environment in this country, because of the fact that you're either on the bus or under the bus, politicians across the country, elected officials, very simply do what they think is politically correct. And they think it's politically correct to release videos. Well, we do not release the evidence in murder trials,
right,
in murder investigations. We do that for a reason, to protect the integrity of the case. If the police are going to be handled differently, okay, let's make that decision. But don't unilaterally just do what people are suggesting. Look, if you listen to communities in this country, they want civilian oversight of police departments. Well, we've got that here in Chicago. We've got the police board. If you listen to the same communities, they'll tell you that they want outside agencies conducting investigations into police uses of force. Well, we have that here in Chicago. We have IPRA. The other thing that everybody wants is that they always want a federal investigation. Well, in the Laquan McDonald case, we got one. IPRA went right to the FBI, who went right to the U.S. attorney, who impaneled a grand jury, which still has not concluded. Nobody has noticed that. So you've got the oversight, you've got the outside investigations, you've got the federal investigation, but when you don't like the results, what happens? Everybody goes crazy. And suddenly the next thing you know, I'm out of a job.
Yeah, you left us quickly.
Where I had no authority to
right.
do anything but put that officer on desk duty.
What are you doing now? Are you still active in law enforcement, and what's next for you?
Well, I'm staying in touch with my friends in law enforcement. I'm obviously doing a lot of speaking about law enforcement. But as far as professionally, I started my own company. It's a security and consulting company. And I'm out working, bidding on contracts and trying to make some money. I mean, I'm having a lot less stress. Everybody tells me they've never seen me this relaxed. And my response is always simple, because I've never been this relaxed.
Right, but relaxed relaxed is not what you do well either, though, I'm sure.
No, not good at it.
Listen, I'm glad we reconnected, and I'm sorry about the circumstances you left under. And I'm, you know, I don't know if you remember the day specifically, but the day, I mean, you left this show and you went into that meeting and got blindsided, and you were scapegoated. That's not just my opinion; that's the opinion of many. But I'm glad you're speaking out. I hope you continue to do it, and you're always welcome here.
Well, I think I still have stuff that, you know, at least some ideas to contribute to what's happening around here. I always thought that one of my strong points was to unpack a problem and put it back together again and figure out how to solve it. And this seems to be a problem in this country today, certainly in the city of Chicago, where people are dying in record numbers from the early 1990s. That's simply unacceptable. Every action has a reaction. And this is where we find ourselves today. And I think it's appropriate that I stay involved.
Well, as I said, you're always welcome here, and I echo what you've said
throughout
this conversation, because we live in a world now where everybody wants to tell you how pissed off they are, but nobody wants to offer a solution or buy into solutions offered by others. They just want to complain.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, nice talking to you. Hold on a second. It's 727. Steve Cochran Show continues next. We'll get the big story on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The secretary received request from a total of 9 states requesting a roll call vote on adoption of report on the Committee on Rules. Subsequently, the secretary received withdraws, which caused 3 states to fall below the threshold required under the rules. Accordingly, the chair has found insufficient support for the request for a record vote.
A little wonky, a little deep in the weeds, but you had to have 7 states request a roll call vote to get a roll call vote, not on the candidacy or the nomination of Donald Trump, but on the rules itself yesterday. Pat Brady was there on the floor shooting spit wads at the podium, I'm sure. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Why was the rules thing important?
Well, it would allow what they were trying to do is a roll call vote, meaning like when you go to the state of Illinois, you say, instead of saying the 69 votes go to Donald Trump, you'd do a roll call. So they'd say, well, Pat Brady, how do you vote? And then I would say, well, I vote for John Kasich. And that was going to happen all across the country, and they didn't want that to happen. The backstory there, too, is the reason they couldn't get those three states in is the secretary of the RNC was hiding from them. And they had to deliver the petitions to the secretary.
So yeah, right. That's funny.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, but to be completely frank, when this started going on, I walked off because I didn't want anything to do with what they were doing because I saw no end game. They just wanted to disrupt. And to me, it was not, as much as I don't care for our nominee, I didn't want to just screw up the convention just to screw it up. If there was a chance it was going to make a difference, I was all for it. But these guys, I met with them, I'm like, you guys, nothing's going to happen here except a big show that's going to be good for TV, but it's going to be bad for the party. So I walked off and went over to the Kasich event.
It's already a TV show and not a great one. Kasich is not speaking at the convention. He's taken some heat from it. But again, Trump, you know, being Trump, Trump and his people ripping on Kasich, who is still a very popular governor in Ohio, a state you have to have. What's the sensibilities in doing? I mean, okay, he doesn't want to speak at the convention. Maybe you're offended. But there's no upside to ripping Governor Kasich, is there?
No, and they did it preemptively. They started ripping on him early in the morning. And at the time that food fight was going on the floor, Governor Kasich was doing an event actually with the Illinois delegation. And I went and stood with him at that, and he was tremendous talking the good message of the party, meaning, you know, the good things that we want to talk about being a party that's going to solve problems, inclusiveness, not angry. And it was a great message, and the contrast to what was going on in the convention couldn't have been clearer. And, you know, I got to ding the RNC a little bit, too. They heavy-handed it big time. They didn't need the controversy. And I think everybody on that in that mess yesterday looked bad.
Pat, when he was talking to the Illinois delegation, was he being asked whether Trump can win Ohio?
No, there was no Q&A. He talked about the police shootings, and then he spent a lot of the time talking about Illinois and how that we need to stick with Governor Rauner, and he faced the same problems in Ohio, and he turned the state around. And that's why he's got I think he got 67% of the vote, Governor Kasich, in the last election. I think he's got close to an 80% approval rating. But it was more about Illinois than anything, and then he didn't take questions. You know, at the very end, he talked about just broader Republican principles, and it was the best speech I've seen him give during the entire campaign.
Where were you last night? Were you on the floor?
Yeah, I was on the floor the whole time. Actually, I had a camera shooting stuff. Saw a couple protests and there was
and lots of goofy hats. How did the Melania speech play in the room?
Great, because the last night thematically was such inspirational to hear and sad to hear the victims of some of the foreign policy mistakes get up and speak. But it was somewhat, if you're in the room, kind of a somber night. And she lifted it up at the end, and she did a great job. But in true Trump fashion, they can't do anything right. And now the story is that the speech was plagiarized.
Yeah, and I don't know how many of the clips you've seen comparatively, and this story will go away in a day, I promise you. But it is stunning to me, the stupidity of the Trump campaign, how this continues to happen. Because there's only two possibilities here. And the two possibilities are, because of the smallness of his campaign staff, somebody decided that nobody would catch them, and they just did this because it was easy and it was 8 years ago. Pat, I got to tell you, I think it's a better possibility because Melania said she wrote a good chunk of it 2 or 3 weeks ago. She's not politically savvy. She went back for inspiration, and she lifted it. And then nobody on the staff's not big enough to vet the speech.
I think it's probably the latter because she's not, like you say, political, and she's not going to, I don't think, get on national TV and lie about who wrote it.
Right.
Or see the significance of having saying, you know, a lot of these guys say they write their speeches and they don't. But I tend to agree. But to me, the broader thing is it's just another screw up. And, you know, walking back from the event last night, and they're literally walking through one street, I saw at least 500 police officers. And that's the kind of country we're in right now. And we aren't talking about those kind of problems. We're talking about plagiarism. I mean, I don't know what that does to move the ball forward for the rest of us.
What happened to show business for this convention? What happened to actual show business pizzazz, dancing girls, ring card girls. I don't know, stuff that would be, you know, more Trumpy. I don't see much Trumpiness on stage.
I'm shocked because I thought it was going to be all Trumpy. The only Trumpy was when he came out to We Are the Champions with the smoke.
Yeah.
When he introduced her.
The silhouette.
Yeah.
And he loped out.
You know, I just want to say one thing about the Melania speech because I watched it, and this is last night before the, you know, the allegations of plagiarism came out. She handles herself very well. She's a very good speaker, and personally, maybe it's as a woman, I enjoyed hearing her background about her parents. You know, it reminded me all of our grandparents emigrated here.
Yeah, but you know what's funny, though? What struck me about it was, because I agree, I thought she did a nice job, but what struck me was that's a moment, like Ann Romney in 2012. She really took you inside the relationship with Mitt. I didn't get that from her. I didn't get that, here's what Donnie's like at home.
Right.
Here's a funny story about Donnie and I making cookies. You know, we took a vacation to the Poconos, and we stayed in a heart-shaped bed. You didn't get any of that. You didn't get any anecdotal stories of the family. Isn't that where that usually goes?
Yeah, and that's what it's supposed to be. And I agree. She did a great job, and she captured the audience completely, but there was none of the personal, let me tell you about, you know, who did the best with that was Elizabeth Dole when she talked about Bob Dole, who's actually there. He was there last night.
Uh-huh.
She did a tremendous job with that. Melania didn't do that, and the Trump jet left 16 minutes after she was introduced. He was out of here.
Is that right?
Yeah, usually they come back and give you a hug. And remember when Al Gore gave her that big kiss?
Yeah, it wasn't comfortable.
Yeah, it was not good.
No, not good at all. Not good at all.
But I agree. That was my takeaway from the speech. But she's to sit and watch her, she's a stunning woman. She really captured the whole room.
Yeah, and speaks, what, five languages?
Five languages, yes.
I won't say I won't vote for her. I ain't voting for him, but I might vote for her. What are you doing today in Cleveland?
A lot of stuff going on. I'm going down to the breakfast. Lewandowski's supposed to come speak. Kind of the same schedule. I don't even know what the speakers are tonight, but I spent a lot of time yesterday just roaming around the back halls, which is fun to see who's there.
And waiting for security to throw you out. Who's the most interesting person you've seen so far other than Ro Khan?
I did see Ro, and we were both sweating. But you know, Newt Gingrich, Congressman McCarthy, a lot of people, you know, political people. I mean, these Republicans don't have celebrities. Mm-hmm. It's mainly, but you know, to me though, the guy to see was Bob Dole. I've always admired him.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was there.
I had a great moment with Bob Dole when he was the majority leader in the Senate in the office, one of the most historic offices there are. Shook hands with me, found out my father was a World War II vet, and thought I was the son he never had, and started cursing like a sailor, and we were laughing it up. One of my favorite things that ever happened in Washington.
Yeah,
by the way, the World War II Memorial doesn't get built without him. They'd still be talking about it. So he's a true hero.
Well, the Americans with Disabilities Act didn't get done
either. That's true, even more important. All right, Pat Brady, thanks. Try to stay out of trouble. And Melania already has a very rich husband, so don't look at her like that.
Okay? Believe me, not my interest, but she was very good.
And keep in mind, the ultimate truth here, you can't get the Trump offer.7:56. Remember Keith Olbermann used to do the worst person in the world every day? I don't think it's easy to find the worst person in the world every day. I mean, imagine how many times I would have picked Trump. But the easy winner yesterday was Danny Mathers. Danny Mathers is a Playboy playmate. And she was working out in an LA fitness gym. And she's in the locker room. And a woman was getting changed to get in the shower. And she took her cell phone out and took a picture of the woman. She's a heavier woman. And took a picture of the woman and said, if I can't unsee this, then you can't either, and tweeted it out.
That's awful.
The good news is the public responded appropriately in a world of fake outrage, an outrage about everything. You ought to be outraged by this. And LA Fitness did the right thing. They've banned her for life from all of their gyms. She had a couple of minor sponsorship deals that are gone. And she's being treated like the scourge, like the horrible person that she is.
Well, how about invasion of privacy?
Well, it's illegal. I mean, she could face some criminal charges. If this person wanted to sue her, they could certainly do that. Sharing a person's naked image without their consent is illegal in California. I'm sure it's illegal in Illinois.
Yeah, it is.
She, as I said, been permanently banned from the chain of gyms. She had a job on a radio show in L.A. She lost that yesterday. She was fired. And she's getting crushed online, and rightfully so.
Yeah, you can't take a picture of someone in a locker room naked and post it.
She said after deleting the image, Ms. Mathers posted an apology on Snapchat in a series of videos saying her actions had been, quote, absolutely wrong, quote, I've chosen to do what I do for a living because I love the female body and I know that body shaming is wrong and that's not what I'm about. It's not the type of person that I am.
Then why'd she do it?
Really? That's exactly what she did. You don't get to say, hey, well, that's not me. I didn't do that. Hey, you did? That's exactly what you did.
Come on. That's awful.
Don't hit send.
Idiot. That is true, don't hit send. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad we busted her.
It's, no pun intended.
Yeah, because hers is fake. It's 7:58. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah.
Kiss the 8:13 now. Dean Richards joins us. Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I just found out that Grzanich owes Andrea money. Steve, what am I? The banker here? Why don't you pay Andrea the money you are?
I actually left my wallet at home again today.
What are you, deadbeat? Borrowing money off women on the show?
Unlikely story. Yeah, I left my wallet.
No, Steve, it came up because
Vandeville, does Grzanich owe you money?
I don't know. I better check. Uh-huh.
Sandberg, Grzanich borrow money off you?
I knew it was going to be like this.
Uh-oh.
He borrowed money once, but he paid me back.
How long did it take him to pay it back?
A few days.
Dude, come on, man. You need
$10.
Me to loan you money to pay back the money you owe people?
I think you only borrowed like $8 from me.
It was $10 I borrowed from Andrea.
Yeah. Steve, you take it. It came up because we...
I can drive home right now and get my
wallet. No, and it was doing...
I think
doing,
you should.
And it was doing
right
a
now.
Coffee
we'll
run, and
we'll
I said...
time you.
I'm going to use Route 53.
Let me give you money. I don't have any cash. And then it, you know, was the whole cash discussion. And
right.
It was
and
more
she,
on
and,
me.
And she actually saved my life the day before because I was going to give her $20 for something else that I had to contribute to. Mm-hmm. And she didn't take it. And so on my way home, I was almost at a gas, stopped at a gas station, and the ATM machine wasn't working. So
see?
The $20 saved my life.
There
Steve,
you go,
I'm gonna
Steve.
Get, Steve. You see this? Look at the camera. See this $20?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give you $20.
Do I have to take something off for that?
I know. You have to give me $20 if you're taking off your clothes.
I knew it was a good idea to put the pole in the studio.
I'm going to give you $20. You don't have to pay me back. Okay. But I want you this to be your emergency fund. I want you to hold the $20 here for when you forget your wallet.
Okay.
Oh, in that case, yeah, Grzanich does owe me money.
So
you want me to give this to Steve?
Yeah. Is that real
okay.
money?
It is, Steve. I have it.
Money.
Oops, there it goes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So
actually,
I
bring my wallet to work.
Breakfast.
Thank God you can do the news. You operate your life like a child, man.
You know, this wallet thing, it's so. I have so much stuff in my wallet that I just...
I do understand losing things,
mess.
Though. I mean, I lose my ID.
No. Just because this conversation's making you uncomfortable, now you just chime in. Dean Richards is here. This, of course, is the Dean Richards segment. You can
Steve
tell.
Owes me $20 also, and I've never even met him.
So, you know, I'm really new to mornings, but do none of you have, like, these moments where you just have, like...
No, we're all perfect.
Brain... What, really? You don't like...
No, of course we all have this.
I lose my ID a lot.
Every day, Andrea does not have an ID.
And I say stuff like later in the day when I'm really getting tired that I'm like, did I just say that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's usually your 9 o'clock newscast.
He's going through the transition. He's going through the transition.
Manopause.
We've all been... This is like morning show, a pause.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get loopy after a little while. Right. I don't understand how you... Andrea, how do you lose your ID? Don't you have pockets?
You know, I have a bag, and it's like an abyss. It is. I put it in.
I think I put it in
the bag.
People driving to work now. Listen, what kind of a wreck is that show?
And you know, people make fun of me for wearing this thing. I have a slider. I don't know if you can hear it, but I have my ID, building ID on this slider.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd lose
attached
it.
Attached to his neck. Yeah, it's attached to the collar of his shirt.
Maybe you ought to put your wallet there, too.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
And absolutely. It has the name of the old business he used to work with.
We're
going to
get you like a St. Bernard whiskey barrel on the front just to hold everything.
Oh, we could get mittens to
or
attach to
a St. Bernard
sleeve.
With a whiskey bottle. That'd be great.
Dean Richards and I will talk about...
I love this. Sunday was the anniversary of the famous Monkey Scopes trial.
Yeah,
that was broadcast on WGN.
Yeah,
a historic moment. And I focused on Sunday morning, and I'm focusing again now that is what was on WGN then, 90 years ago. This is what's on WGN now. Where's your wallet? Do I owe you $20? Where's William Jennings Bryan when we need him?
Gonna go out to the car. Wally Phillips' lightning bolt will come down at me. Stephen Colbert's in the news. Taylor Swift and Kanye West and Kim Kardashian are in the news. Chris Brown chimed in on that mess.
Again, historic broadcast 90 years ago. Kim Kardashian now.
Guns N' Roses gets ironic. And Star Trek IV.
What, get ironic?
Yeah, it's ironic, don't you think? The story, the Guns N' Roses
story?
Oh,
I just got that.
Yeah. Not just a pretty face. I'm also the collector.
You are clever. In addition to being loaded with cash, apparently, you are clever.
Handing out 20s left and right.
I'll make sure Grzanich gets this.
Yeah.
If I don't lose it before then.
Well, you know, based on the fact he owes you 10, I'd give him half of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's 8:17. Wait, no, that means I paid you back. What? That doesn't make any sense.
And I made money off the deal, too. Look at that.
10-0-9-7-2-0. Back to Dean, live from Channel 9.
And I'm getting my scripts from Michelle Obama.
Yeah?
I wanted to see what I'm supposed to say today.
Yeah. Did you notice last night when Melania said 4 score and 7 years ago? We're dedicated to the proposition that I'm free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
I didn't see that.
I mean, it sounded familiar to me. It seemed like it just sort of rang a bell.
I was at the theater last night.
What'd you see?
I was at the official opening of the show that is at the Goodman Theater called War Paint.
Okay.
It's a world premiere musical that stars two major, major heavy hitters from Broadway. Both two-time Emmy winners, Patti LuPone and Christine Ebersole, they are playing Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden. There was an intense rivalry that existed between these two captains of the fashion and more makeup and beauty industry. They really revolutionized the makeup and beauty industry. And it's
who played me in that?
You were actually left out of this script.
What?
This was kind of an edited version, apparently, because I know...
Unbelievable.
I know that you did...
Fashion titan like I am?
You played an important part in the development of the Powder Puff.
I did, actually.
A lot of people don't know that about Steve.
Yeah.
Very, very involved in that. But yeah. It's a really well-done production. They're amazing. I mean, they are just on a completely different level of talent and professionalism and timing, everything. They are amazing.
They should be in a play called Not My First Rodeo.
They should be. They should be. The supporting performers in the show are great. It's a very, very entertaining musical. Although I got to say, the story, especially in the second act, I think meanders just a little bit. And while there are great songs, great moments in the show, I like to leave a musical and have a song kind of stuck in my head.
Yep.
I mean, that says to me that song made an impact on me. And I really have to say that I don't think there are any songs in this like that. That said, I am very much recommending it. It's definitely headed to Broadway. It's going to be here until August 21st. I gave it a B+. So
that's good.
You want to see two of the very best living actors from Broadway. We have them here in Chicago right now, Patti LuPone, and a New Trier alum, Christine Ebersole, grew up here in the
Chicago
area.
She's great and everything.
Yep.
Yeah, tremendous. All right. Well, the whole world is hanging on every second of the Kanye West, Taylor Swift battle.
Sort of
when will Kim Kardashian be locked up for her crimes?
It actually could happen. But here's the timeline with this whole thing. Last February, first of all, Kanye West calls Taylor Swift to tell her that he has written a song in which she is mentioned and just we wanted to let her know about it.
And that song would become Famous, the song, right?
That would become the song called Famous. So the
with a video where a stunt double who looks like Taylor Swift is naked in bed.
And
with
Donald
him.
Trump and George Bush.
Yeah, they're all naked in bed.
A lot of famous people all naked in bed together.
Right. But Mark Sapelsa was in there. Did you see that?
It was a little odd. Yeah. That seemed a little unusual to have Mark in there.
Yeah.
So they make this call last February. Over this past weekend, Kim Kardashian leaks the recording that Kanye allegedly made of this conversation onto the web that puts Taylor Swift in a negative light. Taylor Swift last February, when she learned that there was a recording made, had her lawyers contact them, demanded that the recording be destroyed. It never was, and Kim leaked it over the weekend. It's against the law in California to record a phone conversation. It's a felony. So the reports now this morning are saying that with Kim Kardashian's leaking of that recording, Swift is now reconsidering whether or not to file charges against them for recording the illegal recording of that conversation.
Which she could do because it would be illegal. But having said that, we need a voice of reason. So what does Chris Brown think?
So Chris Brown, who's been in and out of jail on his own.
That's what I mean, a voice of reason.
Yeah, he chimes in on this whole thing. And basically what he says is that everybody in this is acting like a teenager, that they need to stop. Here's his exact, this is his exact.
I love that Chris Brown is being the mature one.
Right? His exact Instagram, who gives a blank?
Yeah.
Everyone really acting like little kids, make music and shut up, Chris Brown.
That's great. You know, I was talking to Andre about off the air a little while ago. What do you think the dinner conversation is like for Kanye West and Kim Kardashian?
Wow. We're not going to say what about? We actually said, are we?
Hi.
Do you think I'm pretty?
I'm the best.
What?
I don't feel pretty today. Am I pretty? By the way, that's Kanye. How's my Kanye coming along?
And I thought I saw some good theater last night. That's some thespian right there.
You're darn right it is. Boy, you want to talk about ironic. What happened to Guns N' Roses?
Well, they were in Toronto, Canada the other night. They did a little concert in Philadelphia, I'm sorry, and they were traveling to Toronto, crossing, Steve, the very dangerous U.S.-Canadian border.
Yes.
They are in their tour bus. It gets stopped. And while the officials are checking it out, they found a gun on the bus.
Guns N' Roses were stopped for guns.
Ironically, no roses on the bus.
Maybe it would have if they robbed a rose store, a flower store.
Just right. Rose Byrne, who was a groupie at the St. Louis show.
That's illegal to bring guns over the border.
Mm-hmm.
Axl Rose said that it wasn't theirs. They didn't. None of the band members. Turned out the gun was owned by a member of the touring company. And no charges were filed.
What I do. I have all my roadies carry my weapons.
And it carries your weapons.
Yes.
What's yes, I do.
My roadies. And finally, what did Stephen Colbert do in Cleveland?
Last night, as you can imagine, late night TV was just loaded with post-convention coverage. Most of it was recorded. But Stephen Colbert, I got to say, I do not know how he's going to top himself, because it was an unbelievable show last night with song and dance numbers and huge production numbers. Jon Stewart came back. It was a very funny bit that probably would. I was going to play some audio for you of it, but it wouldn't make so much sense on the radio. But Stephen Colbert goes to what is said to be Jon Stewart's house, a little shack out in the middle of the woods now, to tell him that the convention's going on. And he doesn't, he doesn't really know what's going on. He's not following it anymore. He thinks that Jeb Bush is the candidate. And while he's drinking some water, Stephen Colbert tells him that it's Donald Trump, and it's a huge spit take. It's like the silliest spit take ever, which was hilarious. Colbert also last night, for the first time since he's been on CBS, brought back his Colbert Report super conservative persona, which was hilarious. He did the word that he used to do on the old Colbert show all the time, which was Trumpiness, last night. And also had a few words here and there in his monologue, and I do have a little of that for you.
Yes,
we are the champions of the world, and we are going to restore conservative American values by entering the music of a bisexual Englishman. Now, tonight's official theme of the convention was Make America Safe Again. It's a major concern, safety, major concern for the GOP right now, because just a few months back, some guy broke in and stole their entire party. A little shaky. They're feeling a little shaky right now.
It is funny.
He was very funny last night.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Very funny, and he's live all week, so it is. He was talking about things that just happened, you know, just a half an hour beforehand, so recommending that. If Stewart's supposed to be on again later in the week also.
All right, buddy. Thank you for that.
See ya.
8:31, back with a big story right after this on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
My Rock parents and I were raised with so many of the same values.
That you work hard
like,
for what you want.
You work hard for what you want.
That your word is your bond.
That your word is
you
your bond.
You
that you do what you say you're going to do.
That you
treat
people with respect.
With they dignity and respect, even if you don't know them, and even
life.
If you don't agree with them.
That is
and Barack and I
continue to pass
set out
to
build
son.
Lives guided
and
by these values and to pass them on to the next generation because we want our children and all
because
children
we want
in this
our
nation
children in
to know
this
that
nation
the only
to
limit to the height of your achievements
limit
is the reach
your
of your dreams and your willingness to work hard
your
for
dreams
them.
And your willingness to work for them.
I am Malcolm X. Do you like the part when she said, I had a dream? There's a hashtag called Famous Melania Trump Quotes. Roe Count, have you seen this?
I have not yet.
Here's a few. I'd like to thank my speechwriters, copy and paste. Here's another one. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us.
I like that in a Slovenian accent.
My favorite is this picture of Melania. I don't know if you noticed, Ro. Attractive woman.
Yeah.
With a flag in the background and her hair blowing in the wind, and it says, I'm a proud, independent black woman.
So not right.
My theory on this, Rokan, is that she, not being in full command of the language, and also because she's not necessarily politically savvy, she goes to research because she wants to get the speech right. She goes to research it. She goes back. She sees these quotes. She pulls some of the quotes. She puts them in her speech. Because Trump's organization is so small and disorganized, nobody vets the speech, and there you go.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory. I'm not sure that she actually had anything to do with the speech before she read it, you know?
But what I don't want to use a political term here, but what kind of a dumbass would go ahead and do that if they knew what they were doing?
Well, dumbass, I think, is the right term. My sense is that nobody, okay, so your bottom line is that nobody saw it, and that's true. Once it worked its way up through the level of you know the Trump organization. So when it got to Paul Manafort, who is the hardest working man in all of show business right now, because he's trying to put out every single fire that is going on. I would imagine that's probably true, right? That no one caught it. I don't know who wrote it. I didn't, you know, she worked very hard on the speech. Obviously, the Trump people are going to distance her from the speech writing. CNN is reporting that sources are telling them that Trump is furious about all this. But, Steve, can I just go back to something? Yesterday afternoon, while we were at the Quicken Loans Arena, we had are you familiar with David Axelrod? You know who he is?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to recognize now because he doesn't have a mustache, but he was on set with us, as they like to say here in Cleveland,
right?
on the radio with us, and he said this. He said not that. He didn't say that. He said this. Wait, he didn't say that either. He said this.
Donald Trump has a very hard-edged image out there, and to present him as a family man, as a husband, to give people a richer sense of the values that animate him and so on, that would be very, very important to her, as it was, frankly, to hear from Michelle Obama when she told Barack Obama's story in 2008.
Okay. So basically what Mr. Axelrod is telling us is that these kinds of speeches are made every day. You can apparently buy them at CVS.
Well, you know what? It could very well be. Could very well be. Our own Patty Vasquez made the Twitter line.
Oh, did she?
Immigration is the sincerest form of flattery.
Oh, that's not bad.
All right, so who'd you see yesterday other than Axelrod and his, obviously, the metronome he carries with him at all times?
He really is. He's the most measured human being ever, which is kind of funny when you stop and you think about it. There's a ton of people. It's funny, we were walking out last night, and I said to our producer, we were kind of trying to get away from the media center that we were in to get down to where all the action was, and kind of rushing through, and producer almost runs over a guy. I go, do you realize who that was? And he goes, no. He turns around. It was Carl Bernstein. We almost killed Carl Bernstein last night.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
No, and I thought to myself, now what if Carl Bernstein must be licking his chops, right, waiting for a Trump administration, because this will be number two. He can go out, take the beginning and the end of his career, bookend his career with taking out presidents.
That's very true. That's a great point. And Carl Bernstein now, who looks a little trollish, I like the idea that he's just walking around smirking, just waiting for his moment again. I like that.
Yeah, he's fun-sized, I think is the best way to describe him. He's like so many members of our media. He's one of those guys who's Anderson Cooper-sized.
We gave you credit yesterday, and it was deserved because you called it that there would be some sort of mini-insurrection at the top of the convention when everything was gaveled in. It went nowhere. Turns out, Ro, that was handled by the same people that did the turkey coup last Friday night.
Actually, Steve, you might be right. It might be the exact same people. But this is, you're going to see a little bit more of it today, we're told.
Is that right?
Yeah. The Cruz people are planning, even though these were kind of the Cruz people, but they didn't do it in Cruz's name. There may be some sort of form early in the preceding city, maybe around the same time or a little earlier, amongst the Cruz people making a statement here. You know what the big buzz is around here right now is the fact that the Trump family is so intimately involved in this. I think there is such a backlash now to what Melania did last night. And it was, you know, overall, by the time we were done with it, it wasn't a terrible speech. I mean, it's a little hard.
The speech itself was fine. It was fine.
Yeah. I mean, and she looked nice. Although, I mean, that the reality is when they did the back shot of her, the sculpted nature of her dress, it was not something you'd normally see in a first lady.
I thought that too. A little tighter on the buttocks.
Yes, exactly. Andrea, exactly right.
I know, I thought that too.
You're saying most first ladies aren't bootylicious?
No, I am. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, I concur.
I'm going to say Pat Nixon a little, but other than that.
Eleanor Roosevelt a little bit.
Yeah, well, no, she was hippie. I think the way to describe that. But anyway, but the point is that you
Melania
know.
Melania walks around going, Donald, does this dress make me look fantastic? Never gets in trouble at home.
that is true. And what, you know, what was really interesting was how quickly everybody was wheels up from that. You know, it was like, okay, we're done here, okay?
Right.
And then he gets back into the Tahoe, and he gets, or the Suburban, and then he gets back to the airport and, you know, zooms off to whatever he's going to go do. And they're back. You know, they slept last night at, unlike the rest of us, they got to go back to their beautiful bedroom, gold inlaid bedroom at the Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue.
Do you get the impression from hearing Melania's speech, because we were comparing it to Mitt Romney's wife, Ann Romney, where she actually talked about things they'd done together. Do you get the impression Melania's never met Trump? Because last night in the speech, it wasn't exactly lovely stories of their time together.
Yeah, that's really that's an important point, because this wasn't really about that. It was, you know, and I don't think it sold very well. And tonight you're going to have one or two. I guess you're going to have a son and the youngest daughter.
Tiffany and Don Jr.
He's having all the people that are closest to him. He's having the guy that brings him a new spoon when he drops it at dinner. He's having a guy who drove him for 20 years. All the people that know him best.
I know you're not supposed to read the comments. You guys will love this, though, in the Twitterverse. But the funniest one, there were two of the funniest ones. I wonder who Trump fired, the speechwriter or Melania. And then my favorite, Melania commented that these accusations of plagiarism are hurtful to her and her children, Sasha and Malia.
I tell you, I should have been paying closer attention. The quote that really jumped out at me last night, where I said, where have I heard that before, is when she said, practice? We talking about practice? I mean, I didn't, you know, that's the one that says, come on. Come on, Melania. That's not in the speech. Come on.
this is going to be a very interesting reaction today. And I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but there is a lot of concern amongst people in his staff, on his staff, about the family piece, that it's too much, there isn't enough. There were a number of real people on the stage last night. You know, you had Rudy Giuliani, Scott Baio, the guy from Duck Dynasty. I mean, those are significant humans. But actually, speaking of Giuliani, I thought Giuliani's speech was great, and he should have been the capstone keynote guy of last night.
Yeah, he should have closed it. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, let Melania get up before
even
him,
though he shrieked more than Hillary.
Yes, well, that's true, but it was good. I mean, he hit the tone. The whole tone of last night was supposed to be safety first, right?
Yeah, right.
And I thought he nailed that speech. But then the issue that we run into is, you know, today the conversation is completely about her and plagiarism and who should get fired and what it is. Right now, Paul Manafort is at a press conference, and he's having to backpedal on all of this. The narrative is lost to them. And then when they get into when the day session starts with the, you know, at the Quicken Loans Arena today, with all the delegates being there, and that starts, I think, about 1 o'clock Eastern time, it's going to be about this until something bad happens on the floor. Then it's going to be about that. They need to write. You know, far be it for me to give them advice, but If I'm Paul Manafort today, you got to write this ship. You got to do something because it's listing a little.
I would give Trump about 6 doses of Benadryl and tell him to sleep until Thursday, and then just take over the next 2 nights. So you could actually save the convention because nothing I'm seeing here is even remotely entertaining, interesting, or forward moving. The greatest challenge Hillary Clinton has next week is to stay awake and try to tell the truth for once. And if she does that, that convention will be the record center in Philly.
Well, it does not matter what Trump does, almost, because Hillary Clinton's implosion is happening simultaneous to this. I mean, that story yesterday about the AP has those pages of documents about the Iranian deal and the fact that within 10 years they're going to be able to start their plutonium enrichment program again, that's the kind of thing that is devastating to her, because she was a part of it and she's taking credit for the Iranian deal. And now the Iranian deal appears to be an opportunity for the United States to give them back their money, say we're sorry, and tell them, you know what, within a decade you can start your nuclear program again. Don't worry about it. And that is not, you know, America is not going to respond well when the details of that start to emerge. And that's all going to end up on her. And Trump could accidentally become president.
But the thing is, you continue to see these kind of huge mistakes, huge problems for Hillary. And Trump can't help but miss talking about them. He just can't find those things to talk about because he sees something shiny and then he wants to talk about how big the crowd is,
right?
And how popular he is. Look, Ro, stay alive. We will find you.
I'll be looking for you, Ro.
Yeah, thank you, Andrea. Yes, we'll be looking for you too. By the way, day two, I got to tell you that the security here has been great, and it's actually much more manageable. So you're coming at a good time.
Ro Khan and Melania Trump, the writer of the Declaration of Independence, also in Cleveland at the same time.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
912, very happy to have in studio two of the most popular governors when they left office, and we don't do that in Illinois. When a governor leaves office in Illinois, generally it's get out! Governors Johnson and Weld, your candidates for president and vice president for the Libertarian Party. And the Libertarian Party, remember, appears on every ballot in America. So we have to get you guys to that magical, ridiculous 15% number to make sure the debates are fair. Welcome.
Thank you. And it doesn't look like it looks like that's going to happen. 13% in CNN over the weekend. Wow. With a lot of time to go.
So, yeah, there's anyway. A lot of time to go. Now, the change.org petition that I signed and that everybody else should sign. You go to change.org and you search this. It'd take you literally 30 seconds. You sign the petition and show that you want to hear from the Libertarian Party as well. How much of an impact will that have?
Well, I think all of it adds up to having impact. That's what I think. And
there needs to be shown that there's a groundswell of support, right? And that helps the poll numbers and everything else.
You know, there's a reason for that. We're the only party that is fiscally responsible and socially tolerant and inclusive. The Dems are not terribly fiscally responsible, and the R's are not terribly socially tolerant and inclusive. And, you know, the polling shows better than half the country is in our camp on that. So that's a policy reason to have us at the debates as well as the fairness reason.
Yeah, because the debates are a huge, huge, huge deal. They've never been bigger. So this needs to be a fair level playing field. So you need to get out there and you need to speak about this. Now, even after this conversation, if the folks decide they don't like you two guys, and I don't see that happening, they still need to get you in the debates.
Well, and it is the Super – Steve, you hit it on the head. It's the Super Bowl of politics. I mean, 100 million people tune in on that. So that opens up some big possibility. And like I say, being at 13% right now, we're the only ones that gained over the last month. So I do think that it's significant. You know, another pillar of our stool, I think, is the military interventions that have had the unintended consequence of making things worse, not better.
Right. I want to ask you about the issue specifically, but first, I'm fascinated by both of you. Successful governors, and Governor Weld in particular, Chicago's your kind of town.
My kind of town.
Yeah, you've got a lot of love for this city.
I was a partner at a Chicago law firm for 15 years.
Right, and with the success that you both have had in business, and I know you've even done a little acting, I think, if I remember reading correctly.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a bad boy. I'm a novelist. I'm an actor. I have 8 years of burlesque behind me.
Right. So the note
what is, better preparation for politics, I ask you.
Right, but the note is, after all of this success, why would you want to be entangled in this again? So what's the answer?
I think Bill and I are on the same page on this. You know, what is life? At the end of the day, you look back on your life, you reflect on it, and the idea is to make a difference, to make a positive difference.
I mean, in addition, I enjoy this stuff immensely. I enjoy the back and forth and having to think quickly on your feet and the debate, and then the overlay is that the issues are enormously important, so that's a great combination.
Yeah, I don't recognize the current Republican Party. Was the lack of recognition of the Republican Party you both grew up with one of the reasons you decided? I know, Governor Johnson, you feel this way too, that all of us are libertarian on some level. We just haven't all figured it out quite
well,
yet.
Well, I've always believed that the Republican Party was about small government, first and foremost. So for 8 months now, I've been saying that if Donald Trump is the nominee, that he's going to alienate half of Republicans. I've been out there. I've been in New Hampshire. I've been in Iowa. And what I've identified is that 30% of Republicans believe the scourge of the earth is Mexican immigration. And it was my voice out there, you know, this was in the 2012 cycle, that said, no, this is not the case. They're not taking jobs that U.S. citizens want. Building a fence across the border is crazy. And when you start talking about deporting 11 million illegal immigrants, that starts with misinformation and just how and why that's happening.
You share that view?
Governor, oh, absolutely. Well? The tone of Mr. Trump's foreign policy proposals is really crazy. I mean, you know, the wall reminds me of nothing so much as the Berlin Wall, which
right.
is a stain and a shame throughout the 20th century, and everybody knows it helped to bring down the Soviet Union. I think, you know, if that wall goes up at some point, the Ronald Reagan of Mexico is going to be standing outside the wall, shaking his fist, saying, Mr. Trump, tear down this wall.
Right.
And he's going to have to do it because he's on the wrong side of history.
I've never seen so many undecided voters, or perhaps voters just disenchanted with their own party or their own candidate right now. So you are going to be going after a lot of the undecideds and the people disenchanted with their own parties. Why should they vote for you? Why should they go Libertarian?
Well, you know, I always make the pitch, the I side with quiz, and I'll make that pitch here on air. Get online, isidewith.com.
Yeah.
Take this 60-question, answer the 60 questions, and at the end
of
the 60
questions. And by the way, it doesn't take long.
It doesn't take long. You don't have to sign up. It's really easy. And then at the end of the 60 questions, you get paired up with the presidential candidate most in line with your views. I always say, hey, do this objectively and then knock yourself out for the person that appears as your candidate. Well, I'm pretty confident that most Americans really are in this libertarian six-lane highway down the middle of what is now Trump and Clinton, and that's, broadly speaking, fiscally conservative, socially accepting, tolerant. I think that's philosophic. That's where you start. That's where you start your governance is from that philosophical position.
In addition to that, another reason why a vote for Johnson Weld is a good vote is, you know, we're a pair of happy warriors, and we didn't fall off a truck yesterday. We're both two-term Republican governors of blue states who really delivered. We both cut taxes. Gary cut taxes 14 times, never raised them. I cut taxes 21 times, never raised them. And both of us greatly improved the unemployment picture and the economy of our states. That's not a bad start. And we're both two-termers, so that's almost 20 years of executive experience. That's not shabby.
And I think people should lock into that. We talked about a second or two before we went on the air. Experience in life is a good thing, not a bad thing. It's when experience in life adds up to nothing and those in power have it and don't take advantage of it. You guys have experience that was absolutely positive in both executive positions.
A highly relevant experience cutting the budget. And
exactly.
Taming
stuff
the growth
that, stuff
of
that
government.
Pertains to the world we live in 2016.
Right.
And what
and
we
the
need
problems
to do
in,
America. In
Washington.
So we don't need to just we don't need to destroy the system. We need people who know what they're doing to be at top of the system.
And we're planning a partnership in this arrangement. We're not planning separate staffs. I think staff seeks to divide. And
you respect each other.
Very
well,
much
we
so.
We served together, and we liked each other a great deal back in the 90s when we were fellow governors, fellow members of the National Governors and Republican Governors Association. Saw each other a lot. I always was bowled over by Gary's athletic prowess. The guy's an Ironman triathlete and has climbed the highest peak in each of the seven continents. I mean, what a start.
Well, just because he can wrestle you to the ground doesn't mean...
Well, and Bill Weld, my political... I mean, this is a mutual admiration, I have
Which
to tell
is not
you.
A bad
my
thing.
Political role model, I put him up on a pedestal. I wanted to grow up and be like Bill Weld. So beyond my wildest dreams, this is my running mate.
Sorry, running mates who like each other and know each other well.
And chose each other.
And
chose each other.
Yeah, we don't have time to cover it today, but if you look at how this partnership came together, it's pretty fascinating, and it'll actually make you feel good about American politics and about democracy. I want to talk to you about the issues specifically because I want people to get something and run with it off this today and go out and talk about you guys because I'm about to endorse you. Stand by for that. The Steve Cochran Show continues. It's 920 on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Former governor of New Mexico, Gary Johnson, is running for president on a Libertarian ticket. His running mate is the former governor of Massachusetts, William Weld. Governor Weld, four straight Republican governors in Massachusetts.
We did, yeah.
What'd you do, with mirrors, trickery,
well,
voodoo?
No. They understand that Democratic legislators love to spend money, and having a watchdog in the corner office is pretty handy in creating a working balance. I think that's why.
The only hope for the Republican Party going forward is to have a libertarian point of view. It's time to get out of people's bedrooms, to stop telling people how to live their lives, and to help lead and to give them a chance to maximize their lives, which is really a core value of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Well, you hit it on the head. Keep government out of the bedroom, out of my pocketbook.
Yeah, that's really where it is. Let's go through some of the key issues, and you guys can bounce back and forth on these. The protection of police is a front and center headline issue. Either one of you, where's the party on that?
You know, I spent 7 years in the United States Justice Department. I was head of the criminal division of the Justice Department under President Reagan, so I understand the law enforcement point of view, and obviously our nation has wounds to bind right now, and we have to do that, but the safety of the first responders has to be first and foremost in our policy.
How do you meld that with race relations?
Well, not using the drug war as an example, not passing legislation that puts police in the middle of public policy that puts them in harm's way.
Yeah, but making cops do things that cops shouldn't have to do.
Making cops do things they shouldn't have to do.
Immigration. We talked about it a little bit with this idiotic wall idea. What's a reasonable way to handle immigration and jobs?
Reasonable way is make it as easy as possible for somebody that wants to come into this country and work to be able to get a work visa. A work visa should entail a background check and a Social Security card so that taxes are getting paid. Background check, we don't want criminals in this country, but make the line moving coming across the border. Right now, you got a line that's not moving, so you got a mother and her kids that have to cross the Rio Grande to get a job in El Paso, as opposed to her being able to clearly or easily get across the border.
I totally agree. It's a labor force issue, and you know, Canada, for example, has a highly developed guest worker program, and people come to Canada, they work, and then they go home again. No problema.
Right.
And we should mimic the same.
And when you get no quotas on the government side, look, there will either be jobs or there won't be jobs. You get government involved in quotas, and then all of a sudden you got problems again.
Right. Peel back the political agendas involved in immigration and deal with the truth of immigration, what we need, what we don't need.
No, it can be very helpful. I mean, we've been a melting pot our entire
existence. That's the whole basis of the country.
And now they're turning it into a demonization opportunity as opposed to a growth opportunity for the country.
Embrace immigration. We are a country of immigrants. I'm proposing, well, we're proposing lower taxes, lower corporate tax. I'd like to abolish corporate tax. That said, we're going to need millions of immigrants to fill the jobs that will exist in this country that won't exist anywhere else because of a lowered or zero corporate tax.
Another thing we should embrace as a country is free trade. I mean, it's been very good for Absolutely. The country over the decades. American workers have a huge productivity edge over workers everywhere else in the world, and that means that we're going to get high-wage jobs as a result of free and open trade. And the twist that Mr. Trump has taken just recently to argue for a closed economy, no more free trade, let's pretend we're an island, we don't have to compete with anybody, that's just going to shrink American manufacturing. It's not going to protect it.
So, well, Secretary Clinton as well. Secretary Clinton was before it before she was against it. I mean, come on. And the fact is, this is a global economy. You can't put the cat back in the bag. You can't put the snake back in the box. We are an interconnected world economy. You have to have free trade.
Yeah, well, the Trump approach has been tried and failed. I mean, he says he's going to put a 45% tariff on this country, a 35% tariff on that country. That was tried in the 1920s. It's called the Smoot-Hawley tariff, brought to you by the Republican Party, and it created the Great Depression.
Right, because 10 seconds later, China and everybody else gets to put theirs in.
How about protecting the homeland, fighting terror, obliterating ISIS, and keeping them from infiltrating our citizens through social media and the like?
The question is how to address this.
Yeah,
well, we've got to be alert to this. I mean, this is very real. That said, how do you prevent a situation that occurred in Nice? I mean, that situation has to exist in 10,000 different places in this country every single day.
You know, when I was head of the Criminal Division of Justice, I had terrorism as well as narcotics. I proposed recently after Omar Mateen, the Orlando shooter, that there be convened a new task force of 1,000 expert FBI agents with experience in counterterrorism who would have a hotline and people could call in. They would collect evidence, clues, if you will, from all over. A troubling part of the Mateen case was the FBI had interviewed that guy twice, and then his name disappeared from the register. Not sure that should have happened when it's someone with suspected terrorist ties, in fact, claimed ties to violent groups abroad. You know,
and if I understand what you're saying we need people who know what questions to ask.
And there's precedent for that. We did it with the organized crime task forces when we were taking out La Cosa Nostra in the 80s, Rudy Giuliani, myself, and other U.S. attorneys. So focus is good. The Enron task force in Texas, that was financial crimes. That wasn't violent crimes, but they delivered the goods. So that's something that can be done by the Justice Department to reach the ISIS lone wolves.
We're going to do a quick update on the news here, and then we got a couple more minutes with you because I want to dovetail what we just talked about into the mental health problem in this country and our lack of funding. You guys know how messed up the state of Illinois is for funding. We're a microcosm of the problem everywhere else. And if you're not taking care of mental health, and what would we have seen in Baton Rouge and what would we see in Dallas? PTSD.
Well, and a dynamic government that we're dealing with new problems. You don't deal with new problems with the old ways of doing things.
No.
So smaller government in the overall context of things. But look, let's be dynamic.
Well, it needs to be more efficient.
more efficient.
Yeah. We're going to get this all fixed in the next 5 minutes. Stand by. More with Governors Johnson and Weld. And what is the website for the campaign?
Well, I always just say Google Gary Johnson. It'll all pop up. But it's Johnson Weld 2016.
Johnson Weld 2016. You could certainly make a donation there if you like. But more importantly right now, get on there and find out where these gentlemen stand on the issues and where they're going. Big break and then back in a moment with the big story. Or a quick break and then the big story. And then the endorsement on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
943, you may not recognize Governors Johnson and Weld because they actually have experience in leadership positions, success in the same, and they have a plan. These are things that would make them unlikely to be candidates in 2016, but yet they're here. And for everybody that's asked me, Steve, what are you going to do? We know you don't like Trump. We know you don't like what Hillary's had to say. I'm announcing, I'm endorsing both of you. I am endorsing Johnson Weld.
Gosh, I had no idea this was going to happen.
Yeah, I've only telegraphed it for 20 minutes. But I believe we need you, and I am happy to help get the word out about you. Obviously, Donald Trump is as welcome here as he was since the day he announced. Secretary Clinton's been on here before, and she'll be back. But it's it feels good to be able to talk to both of you because I know you're sincere.
It feels good to be endorsed.
And neither one of you need this. That's the thing I really like. Neither one of you need this. You want this because you want to do the right thing and you like each other. And I think that's important.
Well, thank you.
So, thank you. Before I let you go, there's been a ton of conversation this year about the Constitution and constitutionality of any number of things. Where does it fall for you foundationally in your set of beliefs?
Oh, that's a hot button issue for me. My 7 years in the Justice Department, I practically had the Constitution in one hand, and I've suggested that tomorrow, instead of getting out the Art of the Deal and reading it for the 400th time, Mr. Trump should get out the United States Constitution and read it for what would obviously be the first time. A lot of the things he's proposed are inconsistent with our obligations under the Constitution and international law. You know, you can't rip up treaties. You can't unilaterally impose huge tariffs. You can't say, I got my finger on the button, but I think I'm going to send some nuclear weapons to Japan and South Korea. I just don't think Mr. Trump is sufficiently serious about the obligations he would have under the Constitution to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. That's a quote.
It's the owner's manual
clause.
It's the owner's manual for America.
It's
and the owners are the people that vote for you.
We are a constitutional republic, and we're governed by laws, and those laws, the U.S. Constitution.
I mean, that's a live issue. Mr. Trump's trade proposals run straight up against the rule of law, which has been the foundation of our economy, both domestically and internationally. It's why we're the envy of the world, is our society and our economy are based on the rule of law.
Well, I'm very, very happy to have you here, and I look forward to having you both back separately or together. I know you're off to Cleveland. I'd say enjoy it, but that doesn't seem like the right way to put it. But thank you for what you're doing, and let's get you to 15 so we can get you into the debates, and then anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Thank you.
Nice to see you both. Johnson Weld 2016?
Johnson Weld 2016.
That's us.
.com. There you go.
I like the hashtag Make America Sane Again, is what you've been saying.
Absolutely.
What they've been saying.
Back with our friend Bill Curtis. A little analysis of this and everything else on 720 WGN.
Chicago. There are several ways to get the news. Either somebody can get it for you, or you can get it yourself. I like to get it myself. I've been a reporter all my life, and it's no different now that I'm an anchor man. When a story breaks, I want to be there. I want to get it as fast as possible. And let's face it, I want to get it faster than anybody else. That's just the way I am.
Bill Curtis, Channel 2 News.
How great is that? How great is that? Bill Curtis will join us in just a second. All right, so tell me, Johnson and Weld, what'd you think?
I thought they were great. I like the fact that they like each other and they know a lot about each other and they're partners.
Texter 630, blown away by the views. Why don't more people support them? I'm in. I'm voting libertarian. 779? I'm not even sure where that is. Steve, love your guests and your show. Please say the website one more time to help us choose the candidate. It's isidewith.com, isidewith.com. And that's the quickie test to determine who your views are most aligned with.
And then somebody, in regards to last night's Donald Trump entrance to the Queen music, said, I thought Donald's entrance was a Hitchcock moment for a second, as in Alfred.
It did look Hitchcockian.
A little bit, a little bit. But tons of positive comments about, and I'm not kidding, I'm endorsing him. I now know who I will vote for.
Not going to vote for Hillary, not going to vote for Trump. No. You're going libertarian.
Going libertarian for the first time in my life. Johnson and Weld.
How do you feel?
Feel good about it.
Feel good.
Feel good about it. You know, we've made a decision in too many places in this country that politician is a dirty word. It's only a dirty word if used in the negative sense. A politician is someone with experience in politics to govern, by definition, and they have the experience to govern and to govern well. Now, I don't agree with every one of their views. The amount of time I've spent looking over their stuff, there's certainly a few things here and there that I have issues with. But certainly the core values that they're talking about, which is, you know, economic sensibility and staying out of people's lives. I mean, come on.
They should get their message out more. I mean, they need to do, and this was a great start, though.
Well, so much of it involves money. There's media access, certainly, but so much of it involves money. Now, you get past the conventions of the next 2 weeks, because it's going to be all Republicans this week, all Democrats next week. Then I think they've got a chance in the last couple of weeks that they have to make that run to get to 15%. There is a rule made up by the people who make the rules that they have to be at 15% to get into the debates. They have to be in the debates, and if they're in the debates, I think they'll show well.
They're close, too.
Yeah, very close. Two points. Yeah, 2 points. 9:51, Bill and Wendy coming up at 10 o'clock. Can you get me, while we wait for Bill Curtis, can you get me the Anthony Sabato Jr. cut, though? We won't have time to play this when we'll get to this, and I think this is classic. Explain, not Anthony, Antonio Sabato, right?
Yeah, you said Antonio, I thought.
Antonio Sabato?
Junior.
Junior. He's a soap opera guy.
He is.
And a Dancing with the Stars guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the people speaking last night. It was Scott Baio first. And as Antonio Sabato said something about Trump, which I think really, you know, of the speeches that were there, you might be surprised by some, not surprised by others. This is about what I would expect a guy who looks like that to say.
Talk about the man you're supporting, Donald Trump. Why Trump?
That's the only choice. There is no one else. I think Trump should just win it now so we can just move on and get our country back on track.
You don't think there should even be an election?
No, I don't think so. I think we've seen enough for the last 7.5 years. I think enough is enough. I'm very thankful. I thank Christ every day for giving me this opportunity to be here and speak. And I believe that our president will be Mr. Donald Trump, and I'm very excited because we're going to get this nation back to where it should be.
Trump is so awesome, we shouldn't even hold an election.
We don't even need an election. Perfect, though. Yeah, he actually said a lot of different things during his speech. His speech was very short, too, didn't you think?
For
a reason.
Oh, he had to get back to a mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah. The show's called Decades, and it is available on your system and my system and our system. And basically, the brilliance of this, and Bill Curtis is the anchor, the brilliance of this is they take all of the archival news footage of a particular day, and they build it around great writers, great producers, and turn it into great TV. George Leopold joins us. Bill Curtis is tied up for the moment. Hopefully we'll get him before the show is complete. But let me get George on. George, explain what your title is.
Hi. It's good to be with you.
Thank you.
Go the Great Race. So it's the story of that day on July 20th, 1969, when human beings set foot on another planet. As you said, I mean, you know, CBS and Cronkite and all of this great footage, I think many of us are old enough to remember that day, and it's quite poignant and, you know, a great moment in TV history and a great, obviously, great moment in the history of mankind and certainly technology.
I was 8 years old, and I remembered my great concern was when they step on the moon, you know, would they be okay? Because I couldn't intellectualize at that point that this heavy spacecraft, you know, in a zero gravity environment had landed on the moon. So certainly the weight of a human being would be fine. But until they actually set foot on the moon, I was concerned something bad would happen. And there we were. We saw it in that grainy black and white bank security camera footage. It's goosebump stuff even now.
Yeah. I remember the picture came in upside down. There is this ghostly figure coming down the ladder.
Where were you on that day?
I was in Appleton, Wisconsin, a few years older than you, and I was glued to my television like everybody else, and this ignited my interest in the stars and exploration and these astronauts and how do we do this stuff. And I've been writing about it and reading about it for the last 30 years. And Neil Armstrong always said he was amazed how many people would come up to him and say, you know, you really, what you did really inspired me. So that part of the legacy carries on today, I think, that we can do these things if we're, you know, if we're together and we have an organizing principle like Apollo was.
Well, and the amazing thing to me is the computing power on the Apollo rocket, I believe at that time, was less than I have in the smartphone sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
And the amount of brain power, the amount of miraculous engineering and science that took place to send them to the moon, turn them around, and come back could only happen because of a unified America and ingenuity of all our best brains to be able to pull that off. I mean, just tonight, look at the moon and go, yeah, we sent people there, and they came home. It's hard to even fathom now.
Yeah, I know. I think it fills most Americans with a great sense of pride. It certainly does me, the fact that we publicly said we were going to do this, and then we did what we said we were going to do, and we did it in public. You'll see the failures, and you'll see the triumphs. So, you know, that's what differentiated our space program with our rivals in the Soviet Union. We didn't know what was going on with their program. Everything we did was out in the open. And, of course, my biography of Gus Grissom discusses the hard part, the dangerous part. Space is hard, and then his crew was killed in a launch pad fire. The anniversary is coming up in a couple of months, and it just shows space is hard. It's dangerous.
Tell me where and when again we can see.
Bill would have been better at telling you, but it's tomorrow. It airs, I think, four times tomorrow on Decades
on
TV. Yeah.
So it's check your local listings, kids. That's what it comes down to. Check your local listings. Find Decades.
Thank you. Yeah.
But don't miss it. And set your DVR for it so you can share it with your kids, too, and you can show them how cool it was.
Absolutely.
And then
6 o'clock is local time here.
6 o'clock here
PM,
in Chicago.
Yep.
George, thank you for your time, and thank you for all the work you've done.
It was a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Take care. Back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.